Hi, my name is Felicity Black Roberts, and this is my story on Smack.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Smack Hospitality Podcast, and this is a joint episode with the FHS World Event in Dubai, powered by The Bench Events. This episode features Felicity Black Roberts. She is the Senior Vice President for Development for Hyatt Hotels in the Europe, Middle East, and Africa region. Felicity and I talked about the hotel development scene in Europe versus the hotel development scene in the Middle East, how the hotel investment community has changed, and what Hyatt Hotels is doing to adapt its brands to different regions. Enjoy the show. Felicity, welcome to Smack. Thank you for being here. First and foremost, it's great to have you. FHS at the FHS World Event in Dubai. I'm told congratulations are in order, first and foremost, to your recent promotion to the SVP of the EMEA team in terms of development. And I'm going to start with a very easy one here. What's changed? Has anything changed? Because now, obviously, the region is bigger. There's a lot of buzz going on around the Middle East for the hotel world in general, not just Hyatt, but also Hyatt. What's it been like the first couple of months?
Thank you for having me. It is different, for sure. So in my previous role, I was very ingrained within Western Europe.
Yeah.
And the nitty gritty of what we were doing there.
And Lord knows there's a lot of nitty gritty in Western Europe.
Many, many nitty gritties. And I'd been very immersed in that for 8 years and really had joined Hyatt with a very specific strategy of what they wanted me to do for Western Europe. So when they started talking to me about expanding the role, it was suddenly like, oof, I've now got jurisdictions and geographies that aren't necessarily my expertise, but it's then taking the experience that I had and actually saying, I don't need to be in the nitty-gritty of this. Actually, this is much more about taking strategy and taking the lead and getting the most out of the teams on the ground. I hadn't fully appreciated exactly how exciting a moment this is for the Middle East and in particular Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and everything that's going on with the 2030 project. And Hyatt's kind of full in on that. I mean, we've opened an office in Saudi. So, you know, for me now, I have to keep reminding myself, rise above, delegate, and take the role differently. And the other thing, and for people listening to this, and a piece of advice is, I was kind of struggling a couple of weeks ago, and a friend of mine and I were having a coffee with one another, and she said, what is it that you're struggling with? And I said, the problem is I haven't got the team beneath me or around me organized yet. And so my boss always had me to take the strain and I need
to do the same.
The me within my team now. So, so I'm, you know, getting that in place, but that's kind of a little bit of a, you know, trick that I'd missed.
If we talk about, and let's stay on the topic of the Middle East for a second, if we talk about the Middle East, obviously news broke this week, exciting things happening with NEOM, which is, you know, one of the projects in KSA that is you know, taking the world by storm and certainly a focus point in tourism globally, probably at the moment, in Jamur and in Saudi. Can you walk us through a little bit of what your thoughts, and I realize you're not in the role for a long time yet, but your thoughts, and maybe that's actually a good thing because you're probably seeing it with a very, you know, unprecedented view, as opposed to others who have perhaps been in the region and seen this come to life, be announced over the past, let's say 12, 16, 18, 24 months. What's your take on it? Because yes, there's a buzz. There's some incredible projects. There's some incredibly gifted people working over there as well, which I think is often overlooked. Most of them Saudi as well, by the way, which I think is very spectacular. Walk me through your first experiences with this. Have you been? Walk me through it.
So, I got on that aeroplane and I went to Saudi. And again, for me, not really knowing what to expect. Actually, that for me was a bit of a revelation because I think sometimes, to your point, you do really get a preconception about something, and it's about keeping an open mind and being there. And, you know, for me, my lasting impression of that first trip to Saudi was just the hospitality of the people around me. And to a person, everybody was welcoming, everybody was interested, and everybody was willing to give their time to talk about what the vision is and what they want to achieve there. And it's, you know, it's always difficult because you see with Saudi, it's always big stuff. You know, they're going to create this mega project, or and then you automatically then start to think about the big brands. Mm. But it's also about Saudi as a country developing and growing. And so, you know, there are also going to be smaller developments. Mm. And so when I look at it, it's like, okay, we can do some real headline stuff with what we've just announced. Yeah. And that's great. And that's very much where Hyatt has sat in terms of luxury and upper upscale for a very long time. But I think there's also a hell of a lot of opportunity in Saudi, which is going to sit in the upscale and upper mid-scale segments. And just the general growth of the economy, the domestic traveler, you know, we've now got the freeing up of society to some degree with, you know, from a female perspective particularly.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, you know, a country that's kind of starting to flap its wings in a very different way. And I said to somebody yesterday, I'm kind of uniquely excited that I've kind of come into this role at this moment.
In this very point in time, Talk to me a little bit about the way that you kind of see what you just touched on in terms of talent. We spoke about that, you know, there's some very talented people over there. And it's not just in Saudi. It's in Dubai as well. It's in Qatar and Bahrain and most of the GCC countries. And the idea of local talent and the idea of localization, which is obviously a very big topic here in the GCC for many different reasons, that obviously then ties in also into women and you know, bringing women into leadership positions, which I think is probably the next step that is you know, to follow at some point down the line. How important is that? And the reason I ask is because not too long ago, the CEO of the Bench Events, which is obviously the company that runs this, Jonathan, was on the show, and he said it makes great sense to do that as well. Because if you have, you know, society kind of behind you as a whole, obviously it's much easier than, you know, not having that full support. How do you see that coming into the country as you know, as developers and you know, hotel brands that are bringing brands that might not have natively been created for the Middle East? How is that? Have you faced any obstacles there? Is it easy? Is it not so easy to bring people on board for what you guys? Because at the end of the day, all part of your role is also to, you know, defend the brands and their integrity, right? Yeah.
So even when I, you know, in my former role, just covering Europe, I was always party to conversations about what we were doing within the Middle East. And I think Hyatt has a history of taking its brands and saying, how do we make these culturally relevant? Mm-hmm. And we've done the same for China. You know, we had a huge bet on China a few years back. Hyatt saw enormous growth in China. But part of that was because we took our brands and we said, how do we make this culturally relevant? And how do we make it work for the domestic traveler and the international traveler? And where do our brands sit within that hierarchy of traveler? And we've done the same for the Middle East. And so a great example, literally right now, that we're like currently in the process, Hyatt launched a brand about a year ago in the US called Hyatt Studios, which is kind of upper mid-scale. It's our entry level brand that was developed as a brand for the States. We've seen the opportunity for how we can roll that out in the Middle East and KSA in particular. And then it's like, well, okay, fine, but then we need to take that brand and we need to take it through a iteration of how do we make it work locally. You know, and that's everything from what do we need to adapt in the bedrooms, food and beverage. So we've taken the brand and we've gone, okay, these are the pillars that create it, but how do we need to modify each one of those pillars to make it relevant? And then obviously get it approved by the various ministries of tourism to make sure we get the right star rating, et cetera, et cetera, because that's still important in these jurisdictions. So we're going through that. And then I think from the talent perspective, the way we look at it is if we have feet on the ground, it's much easier then to develop the local talent. So KSA, a great example. We've had an office in Dubai for a long time. Mm. We've opened an office in KSA. Mm. The guy who's heading that office, he spent 5 years in KSA 19 years ago, and he's come back to be with us there again. So he's got that cultural background. Mm. And so from a development perspective, we would like to put boots on the ground in Saudi. And my list of candidates so far are local.
Mm, very good.
And female.
Very important. Good. We'll come to that in a second. Let's quickly touch back on what you just said in the answer before, Felicity, when you talked about the idea of mid-scale brands and potentially, you know, how that market is disrupted. Would you agree with me if I say that, especially in the Middle East, a region that predominantly is known for luxury hotels and the best and most beautiful hotels on the planet, and I think there's some incredible, I mean, just got to walk outside the front door here and you've got about 10 of them on hand, but that the entirety of mid-scale and perhaps even eco, which might not be the conversation for every hotel brand, but that the mid-scale and economy business in hospitality has kind of celebrated a bit of a renaissance, because it's no longer let's say awkward to talk about it, because more and more people have come to understood, well, actually, there's a lot of money in that segment, let's be honest, and money is still you know, part of the conversation, and second of all, there is now ways to make mid-scale at least a little bit sexier than perhaps its image. Would you agree that we're kind of celebrating a bit of a renaissance in that area? And how are you guys at Hyatt looking to capture on that? Because there's a market there as well, which perhaps is untouched. And not just for Hyatt, for many others as well, because it hasn't perhaps been the focus point as much as others.
Hyatt, you know, historically we have focused on luxury, upper upscale, and entry-level upscale, which was Hyatt Place, Hyatt House.
Yeah.
And even in this region, Hyatt Place, Hyatt House is sort of on steroids compared to everywhere else. And so back to the kind of previous question is, Hyatt Studios was our answer to actually, in the States, we had owners and developers saying to us, Hyatt, we want you, Hyatt, but we want you at a slightly lower entry level point.
Yeah.
Both in terms of construction cost, size of bedroom, and then also, obviously, the guest demographic.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with all of these things and Hyatt now as a brand, we have a large number of brands on our brand bar. And the skill of the individual developer is to go into a market, be able to read that market and understand very clearly what hotel is going to work in which location, because that's the foundation of getting it right.
Yeah.
And so for us to put our name to Hyatt Studios, which is upper mid-scale, I think is a big move for Hyatt. And I think it demonstrates where we see that opportunity in the market and see the value that our name can bring to a brand like that.
If you compare that to Europe, because obviously we've talked about the Middle East and KSA and the potentially, compare that for me to Europe, because Europe, obviously, a much more saturated market in many capacities in many different ways. You know, we're out of Germany, so, you know, we've got a very saturated market in Germany. You live in the Netherlands, as you just shared with me earlier, and we've got strong ties to the UK. All markets that are fairly saturated. Yeah. How does that kind of compare to what you see here in the Middle East, where even in a place like Dubai, which some would call saturated, there's still so much to do? Compare the two. And that must be one of the challenges in your new role now, kind of balancing those emotions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's interesting in that the strategy that we've had for Western Europe.
Yeah.
Because when I joined Hyatt 8 years ago, we had something like 34 hotels in Western Europe. So, you know, big name that everybody recognizes, tiny organization. And the hotels that we had tended to be Park Hyatts, Grand Hyatts, Hyatt Regencies. Where we've tried, what we did in Europe, we had a very clear strategy. Wherever possible, we get the capital city with a brand, with a hard, Hyatt brand. Yeah. And then we could then, once we'd got that, we could then move up and down in terms of segmentation to other brands, secondary cities. I think what we're now, we're kind of through that process in Western Europe and we're secondary cities. But that kind of then coincided with COVID and then the whole resort and leisure piece. And Hyatt's responded to that in terms of buying Apple Leisure Group, the huge amount of resort properties that we now manage. And yesterday we purchased Standard, which I'd say hugely excited to have that brand.
We'll come to that in a sec,
the Thompson brand that we purchased back in 2019. So you see in the market where Hyatt can suddenly go, okay, we can respond differently here because yes, Europe is crowded and there's a lot of hotels, but actually we can we're very strong over here in urban business style hotels. MICE is a particular thing for Hyatt. We've got a very strong MICE sales arm that can deliver.
Yeah.
But we can now play into resorts and we can now play into leisure urban with these brands that we have. Lifestyle. I mean, it's kind of the word, but it means nothing.
The buzzword of the moment.
The buzzword of the moment. You know, how does that differ to the Middle East? I don't think it differs very significantly. I just think the two markets are on a slightly different place in the journey. Mm-hmm. And we still see a lot of new build in the Middle East. We hardly see a lot of new build in Europe. Yeah. A lot of conversions. Mm. So in Europe, our conversion brands, things like JDV by Hyatt, Destination, Unbound Collection, they form much greater proportion of my pipeline than here in the Middle East, where it's new build hard brands. Mm-hmm. So we're just in a slightly different place area on the journey.
Yeah, understood.
But again, it comes back to the, have we as a global organization got the right brands that suit the market have we done the right things for those brands culturally to make sure that they're right within Europe? You know, we also tinker with the brands between the US and Europe to make sure they're culturally relevant.
Yeah.
I mean, my colleagues are building 35 square meter rooms for Hyatt Regency in North America. Yeah. God forbid that I might get to 25 square meter rooms in Western Europe for Hyatt Regency. Yeah. So, you know,
It's different parts of the, understood. Walk me through, because I was going to touch on this. I would love to hear your opinion on kind of the recent years of Hyatt, where, as you rightly so said, there's an element there of acquisition that has happened, the resort space. I saw you on a panel yesterday with an expert on the resort space from Club Med and how that conversation, and I'll come to a sentence you said there yesterday that I would like to hear your opinion on. Again, walk me through the acquisition process. There's a lot there. There's the resort business. There's the urban kind of lifestyle. And I fully agree with you. It's a big word at the moment with very little sense sometimes behind it. But let's assume that the Standard probably would be considered a lifestyle brand to some extent. You've had a big acquisition in Germany not too long ago with Lindner Hotels. Mm-hmm. Walk me through kind of how that process works well for you, and is there a risk there also, because obviously all of that needs to then be integrated into what you guys do, into what you guys believe. The head office in the Windy City in Chicago would like to see that integration somewhat smoothly, I imagine. Give me some juicy background stories here on how easy is that to do, because I imagine an integration of brands that have a particularly strong own DNA without Hyatt being the mothership would feel, well, hey, it's worked so far. Why do we, should we adapt much?
Yeah, so it's interesting, the whole integration thing. I think where our portfolios and M&A teams start from, and Mark Hoppamazian talks about this a lot, and certainly when we purchased ALG, he really was very clear about it, was they actually, I think their starting point often is, is the portfolio somewhere where we haven't got representation, whether it's in terms of segmentation or location? That's obviously a given in terms of what we're looking at, but also culturally, where is this organization matching with Hyatt, and do our values align with one another? Yeah. And Hyatt has a very strong set of values. We care for people to be our best, which kind of morphs as to whether or not you're a waitress in a restaurant serving a coffee through to me looking after my team. Mm. You know, that phrase is actually quite clever because it works on so many levels. And that we care for everybody to be their best, and what we then call the House of Hyatt and our pillars, you know, is that in some way going to align with this organization that we're acquiring? Because if it doesn't, actually from day one, you've got a rebuttal. Yeah. You know, when you marry somebody, you kind of want to know.
Make sure it's the right.
Exactly. You know, we're not married at first sight here. You know, we want to date a little first.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. And then I think Hyatt has probably over the course of the last few years, in terms of the acquisitions we made, Two Roads back in 2019, and then ALG during the pandemic, is how do we successfully integrate those organizations in a way that enhances the whole? So we don't want to destroy what we're buying, but we also need to create value. I mean, we're there to create value for our shareholders, ultimately. So how do we bring those organizations and onboard them in such a way as to create value? So I think, you know, what we saw, which we, and I felt that we did differently, was when we acquired ALG, actually, there was a much clearer cross-fertilization of people from ALG into mainstream Hyatt. So for instance, Javier Aguilera, who came with us from ALG, he's now our group president for EMI.
Yeah.
He's got a completely different mindset because he hasn't had 25 years man and boy Hyatt.
Yeah.
And he comes into it going, hey, why do you guys do it like this way?
Yeah.
So he's been a great challenger for us. And I think we've been a great challenger for him as well. So, you know, so I think that's been a real success story for us as to how we did that. I think the ALG integration has gone much more smoothly than perhaps maybe Two Roads did. And I'm suspecting, well, not even suspecting, I'm sure that with Standard coming in, we're going to go much more down a road of, they had a very strong lifestyle culture that isn't necessarily, you can't necessarily have that culture and the way that it transmits into the hotels in terms of the activation with each of those hotels in the same way as you would do for Hyatt Place, Hyatt House, Hyatt Regency. So I think we will see a much stronger lifestyle division within Hyatt that perhaps sits to the side of and complements what we're doing in some of the other brands.
Yeah.
And I think that's refreshing because actually we're saying, we've just bought you guys and we've got a lot to learn. How can we take what you're doing, the best bits of what you're doing, and create value in Thompson, in Andaz, and JDV by Hyatt, whatever it might be?
Tell me the role of brands, Felicity. Has it changed? Are brands now, I know it's a very grand question and we could probably fill an whole episode just on that topic, but has the role of brands changed in a sense that we look, or also maybe that brands are consumed differently now by clients? Because, you know, there's a question behind loyalty and obviously loyalty programs is a big part of hospitality, and whether, you know, loyalty programs perhaps are getting less popular or more popular for that matter with different, you know, demographics. How have you seen that kind of develop in conversations that you have with owners perhaps as well, where they come to you and say, hey, I know you have this and that brand, I want that brand? Or is it more, here are my here is my data, this is what I'm looking for, what's the brand that corresponds to that? How's that conversation changed a little bit?
I think if somebody on our brand team will be listening to you pose that question, they'll be sitting going, oh my God, what's she going to say? This is dangerous territory. So I think from my perspective, I think what's happened is the hotel investment community mm-hmm. has become a lot more sophisticated. Mm-hmm. And along with that sophistication, we have a group of investors, you know, private equity, institutional, family offices, etc., who know very well, A, the power of the brands, and B, when they're developing something, they have a vision, you know, for their investment.
They don't wake up one day and say, oh, and now I need a brand.
They've already got that vision. And so I guess we have almost two entry points in a way. There's the one entry point where somebody who I probably known for a very long time in the industry, works for one of the big funds, et cetera, will come and say, I'm doing something here and I'm going to talk to you, Hilton, Marriott, and this is the brand that I want you to pitch. We then have to say, okay, what's your vision? What's the location? Is that matching with where we see the brand going and where we think we'll be able to put heads into beds? And then on the other side, we still have a lot of, in Europe, I mean, goodness, still a lot of hotels that are privately owned, where and I don't want to put words into their mouths, but it's almost like the brand is, they know that we're going to help them because they know that we're going to bring a level of sophistication expertise. But equally, they don't want to lose their independence. And often they're almost sort of forced into, you feel that they're clinging on to, but I don't want to be part of this, but I know it's,
I need to.
And that's then a very different conversation, because that's then around, well, okay, this is where you are currently. Do you want to move? Do you see a change? Do you want to invest? And this is the brand from our portfolio that we think fits the best. And then it's back to that conversation which we just had, is culturally, does Hyatt work for them? And then we get a lot more different conversations around Hyatt's culture and how we're going to work with them, as opposed to this PEI over here where it's really quite transactional. So we have very different conversations.
Has that made brands like the Unbound collection, for example, all that more interesting, shall we say, for the investment community? Would you agree with that? Because it just gives you a little bit more freedom, and as opposed to perhaps some of the other brands where we're a little bit stricter, and would you agree?
100%. So, you know, Unbound collection by Hyatt, it, sitting in the luxury space, allows a hotel like the Martinez in Cannes, keeps its name, but it gets the benefit of our loyalty program and everything that Hyatt brings. And to your kind of earlier point, which I didn't address, you know, our loyalty program is growing like billio. So, you know, and we really focus on that because we know it gives returns to the owners. You know, then we have Destination by Hyatt, which sits into the resort space, and we have JDV by Hyatt. And the big success that we've had as well is nesting brands within to those. So for instance, Story Hotels in Scandinavia sit into JDV by Hyatt. So those brands have just given those independent owners, and Linda is the biggest example of that for us, the comfort, the safe harbor
to stay.
A brand Hyatt. But the respect of, you've built something here which actually has its own 2 feet to stand on.
And we don't want to take that away.
And we don't want to take that away.
Felicity, just like that, 30 minutes have passed. It's been a breath of fresh air talking to you. Thank you. I have three quick rapid fire questions at the end with the request for quick answers in the interest of time. If you were to tell me one of your favorite hotels that you've ever stayed at outside the Hyatt world, is there any property that comes to mind that you've stayed at that you can recommend? Not from a development business perspective, from you traveling with loved ones, family, friends, where you remember that was a really beautiful place. Can be anything from a bed and breakfast to five star plus. We've had all, we've had it all.
I have a particular affection for a little bed and breakfast pub in the Cotswolds. It's called the Fox in Ordington, and I have some very, very happy memories of that place.
Very good. A country that gets, or a region or a country that gets far too little appreciation for its beauty or for what can be explored in that country.
Saudi Arabia.
Very good answer. I had a feeling we might go there. In 3 years from now, what are we going to see in hospitality that we haven't heard of just now, or that we can't, we aren't seeing just yet? Is there anything that you would think that will have happened?
In the words of Mark Hoppermasian, my treasured CEO, we don't have crystal balls.
Okay, very good. Very good. Thank you for your time, Felicity. It's been great to talk to you. Best of luck for everything, especially here in the Middle East and also back home in Europe. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.